Hello, and welcome to Covered, a conversation about books with the people who write them. I'm your host, Harry Marks, and today's guest is a short story writer from New York whose work has been featured in Atticus Review, Across the Margin, and Whiskey Paper, to name a few. She's here to discuss her new short story collection, Staggerwing, which has been described by actress Hope Davis as a hilarious, thrilling, and moving debut. Please welcome Alice Kaltman to the show.
Hi.
Hello. I'd like to talk about the origin of the book, because in the back, just past the acknowledgments, I believe, there it lists where the stories had originally come from, and it seems like they all started as these disparate stories from other journals. How did they come together for this one collection?
Well, it really is kind of sort of like not that sexy a story. I mean, I basically started writing short fiction in I think 2013 was when I wrote the title story, Staggerwing, which is one of the reasons why I decided to name the collection after that particular story, but also I like that word. But I just basically kind of discovered my love of writing short fiction and had a lot of kind of positive responses to it. And then at a certain point, you know, pretty much everything I had written I found a home for in fantastic journals. And at some point I just looked down and kind of added them all up and realized I had about 50,000 words, and somebody said, "Hey, you've got a collection." So I sort of did a little bit of curating and kind of rearranging in terms of order, and originally had an idea of sort of just having the stories in there that were specifically featuring dogs. But then I kind of decided, no, you know what, I'm just going to just do them all and see if there's a thread or interest. And I was really fortunate that really pretty early on, Tortoise Books, you know, a couple other places had been interested, but Tortoise, you know, made the best pitch. And it all kind of went super smoothly, which I know is really not usually the case for right. people looking to get published. So, I feel really fortunate.
That's great. And did the stories themselves essentially stay the same when they went into the collection, or was there more editing that had to be done?
They stayed pretty much essentially the same. I mean, there were a few notes that I got from Jerry Brennan, who's the editor and publisher at Tortoise Books, about certain stories that, you know, the great thing about him is that he was very light touch, not super heavy into copy editing, but there are certain stories that he thought, this seems a little too trite, or I'm a little confused about this. So the good thing, I guess, as a writer, and you know this probably as well, is that if someone gives you some kind of feedback and you can say to yourself, oh yeah, that makes sense. Oh, mm-hmm. I could do that. And you don't feel like, oh God, they're completely missing the boat. It kind of makes it easy to do that. But mostly it was pretty minor tweaks to things.
Yeah, that idea of looking at those edits with an objective eye and saying, doing this will make it better. But it doesn't always happen right away. It's
no.
Usually you sit on them for a little while and you curse in anger at the person for how dare they
right.
tell me that what I have done is not perfect in every way. But
yeah
I totally
yeah.
agree with that. Would you mind reading a little bit from the book?
No, not at all. I'm going to read the beginning of a story called Stranger in Paradise. And it's actually the one story in the collection that was not published anywhere else. It was the last story I wrote, so maybe it was a timing issue, but it's a standalone. And I'm going to read the beginning of the story. And I chose it for a specific reason, which maybe I'll tell you.
Okay. Was that the one about the woman with her husband's ashes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Stranger in Paradise. The beach is empty at dawn. The angle of the coarse, crumbling sand undoes Helen's gait. She's not used to walking barefoot. She's jet-lagged and wilted due to the humidity and heat. Her flight from O'Hare had been delayed 2 hours, which meant 2 hours of uncomfortable wakefulness on a hard bench by the gate before she'd even boarded the plane. The only remedy had been to pop a Valium once airborne and chase it down with a G&T from the flight attendant's rolling cart of liquid goodies. 6 a.m. and Helen is still woozy. She's wearing a gauzy caftan over her sporty tankini, but she feels naked, exposed. The rising tropical sun already blazes with an intensity that shocks, feels dangerous. Helen has sunscreen in her canvas tote. She'll put some on once she's found a place to settle. She also has her baggie of ashes, the smidgen of John she carries everywhere, still, even after a year of widowhood. She keeps the baggie in a smooth silk pouch when she's out and about, but sometimes, in private, she takes John out and looks through the plastic at his flecks of bone, his gray dust, his odd leftover clumps. Sometimes she combs through him with her fingers.
Excellent. I'd like to talk about the characters in the book, the main characters in each story, because especially with Helen, or Helen of Troy, as she is called, by the surfer she befriends, they seem to be unhappy with their lot in life. They seem to be at this, maybe it's a crossroads, or they're just at a point in their life where not that nothing's going well for them, but things seem to be stagnant. And I'm wondering, could you tell me about that and why these characters are in this kind of limbo?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think probably what interests me is when people are in kind of a state of disequilibrium sort of in their lives. Like they don't actually even know it in all cases, but there's a certain interest to me of, like, you know, underlying restlessness or dissatisfaction, which kind of leads sometimes to some uncanny or surprising event, which then sort of shifts either their perspective or takes them further down the rabbit hole. Yeah. So I guess I don't necessarily see them all as unhappy, but I definitely see them all as a little bit outside of a state of contentedness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's, to me, also, I guess the reason I chose this, that particular section of that particular story is, I guess I also like when you sort of kind of like coasting along with people. And then suddenly something bizarre happens and it sort of changes, you know, the reader's perspective on who they are and what's happening, or it changes the character as well.
Yeah, I got this feeling, I kept using this word as I'm reading it, realistic fantasy, where, you know, everything's going along, it's a contemporary, realistic story by all definitions, and then this one thing happens that just completely turns it on the reader's head, and it's not something as stark as, you know, suddenly an orc pops up or anything like that, but like in the first story where the woman opens the bed and breakfast and she starts stealing things from the guests, or but not just stealing them, but like holding them or wearing them or putting them in her mouth or anything to feel something else than what she's feeling. And it was that kind of thing that was unique to the characters and unique to the stories, that they were grasping for something to pull them out of the mundane lives they're living, but in doing so it turned fantastical.
Yeah. And I think some of them are more fantastical than others. Mm-hmm. Like some are, but there are definitely, you know, there are definitely at least I can think of three or four that are either very fantastical, but you can kind of tell that as a reader outside it, you're like, this person doesn't really know that they're crazy. But I, as a reader, kind of know that they're not necessarily crazy, but they're a little off. They've really kind of gone over some kind of ledge, and a lot of times they find their way back. But like, I guess like in Bigfoot, the story about the kind of ironically perfect mother slash, you know, goddess woman who aspires to be with the dumpy, frumpy, imperfect moms who are actually the cool moms.
Right.
She kind of really goes over an edge. So, but yeah, I definitely see that. I like that description of it kind of being kind of realistic fantasy.
Yeah. And the one story, which I won't spoil for the listener if they haven't read it, but the one story about the woman preparing the dinner for her husband's boss.
Oh yeah.
And running into his boss's guest. That one threw me for a loop. I did not see that coming.
Oh, good.
You have this one story in the middle though, the Blossoms, which is different from all the others because a lot of them take place. They're like midlife crises run amok. And then there's this one, almost like a flashback story. It takes place in the late 60s at a summer camp with this group of little girls on a hiking trip. And it just goes off the rails. Where did that come from?
Well, you know, what's interesting about that one is that is the one story in the collection that's based on a true event.
Wow.
So that actually is something very, pretty much that happened to me. I mean, I am the main character in that story, and it's sort of, yeah, it is. It's wild. It's a wild story. And I've had it, I never thought about writing it as a story, which is ironic. You know, funny how like you kind of suppress certain things or you kind of shelve them somewhere and you never even have thought of them as anything to write about. And I don't remember how it came up, but I was telling someone about it and they were like, that is the most amazing story. And I thought, you know what? I have to write this one. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, it was actually the most challenging story to write of all of them, I guess, which is sort of what happens when you use really autobiographical material. It's sort of, I didn't have as much distance on it. So yeah. And I originally wrote it in first person and I couldn't do that because something about it being too much me made it too hard to write. So I ended up changing it and starting over and doing third person, and that helped, but it still took a really long time to write.
And why was it included in this collection specifically? Was there a call for it? Or because it does stand out among the other stories as sort of an anomaly.
Uh-huh. Because she's younger, and also it's sort of, it does have that twist. I mean, it does have sort of an unexpected thing happening. But right. I guess, yeah, I think I put it in. I was sort of like trying to, I guess I put it in because I liked it.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's a great story.
Yeah. But I think I wanted it kind of in the middle because I think when I was sort of arranging sort of order and stuff, which I think is something you don't really think about so much when you read a collection of story, but it really matters like what the order is. I think mm-hmm. I also kind of put it in the middle because it sort of felt like, you know, I was kind of doing like, this one's from a male perspective, this one's from a woman's perspective, this mm-hmm. one's from an old person's perspective, this one's from a middle-aged person's perspective. And I think I put it in, it's after, I look at my table of contents, I don't even remember anymore where it is, but I kind of moved that one around, like where I should put it. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I put it specifically after the story that's about the a melody, which is the one that's, you know, about this older man who has to go, who loses his business and has to go back to work as a security guard in Florida.
Right.
And so I thought that would be a good spot for it.
Speaking of that story and a common theme in several of the stories is that unlike a lot of short stories that have a beginning, a middle, and an end, just in a shorter package, you leave yours off on a cliffhanger a lot of the time. And that one in particular about the security guard left the reader hanging at like the worst possible moment because I kept going, where's the rest of it? I want to see what happens next. So why choose to leave them off like that instead of doing the normal, you know, beginning, middle, end on each of them?
I guess I kind of like leaving the reader with like a slight sense of unease.
Mm-hmm. You successfully did that.
Right. Yeah. I hope they feel finished, but kind of still sort of like, ooh, okay. It's sort of like the end, but it could keep going. And you can use your own imagination to imagine what's going to happen next.
Like a good Twilight Zone episode.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of felt a little bad leaving him there. I'm not going to say too much again because I don't want to spoil it for people who might read the book. But it's kind of, it is like an end, but it's also the beginning of what could be a next sort of, series of horrible events in his life and other people's lives as well.
Today's episode is brought to you by Noct Sound Engineering, Nocte helps you record, edit, and produce great podcasts, streamlining the process so you can deliver high-quality shows to your audience. Whether you just need to trim the ums and you knows, or you're looking to set up the perfect recording rig, Nocte has it all covered. Speaking of, Nocte makes every episode of this podcast sound terrific. Consider this more than just an advertisement, consider it an endorsement. So if you're looking to bring your podcast to the next level, contact Nocte Sound Engineering today at noctesound.com. That's NACHTSound.com. Nocte, more than a stack of tracks. A lot of the characters, or almost all of them, seem to have some big secret they're hiding. There's the one that takes place in the snowstorm, and the guy who ends up having a heart attack has just come from a rendezvous with an escort of types. There's the title story, Staggerwing, about the man's trip to Japan. So the choice to include everybody's secret, you know, everybody has this deep-seated secret that they're struggling with. Is that just something that everybody struggles with, that everybody has these deep-seated secrets?
Well, I kind of think they do. I think everybody has secrets. And I guess that connects to the thing that I like about sort of almost people not even knowing that their secrets are secrets, or that their secrets are the thing that might kind of eventually lead them in a kind of wackadoodle like direction in their lives.
Right.
Like in Staggerwing, he doesn't really even know that he has a secret until he kind of comes out of his weird sort of engineering fog, and it's sort of like this moment in his life where he's sort of touched by this attraction he has.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit like, I almost feel like, I don't know if any of the stories start with a secret being known by either the person, the main character, or by the audience. Except for maybe, yeah, that got the one character in the three-person story, Snow Day.
Right.
He definitely carries around a secret that he knows about.
You could argue Helen's husband in her pocket,
ashes. Definitely.
That too.
Yeah, that's definitely her secret. And I think she even talks about that with, with her surf, the sleazy surfer dude.
Right.
Yeah, she definitely has that secret. That's kind of like, I kind of feel like that's her, like, that's like her weird prim and proper kind of personas, kind of really odd, odd secret.
Right. And you had mentioned earlier that the Blossom story was based on a real experience you had. And I'm a firm believer that every author, no matter how much they deny it, puts a piece of themselves in everything they write. How much of you is in these stories specifically regarding the emotions and the idea surrounding being unhappy with your lot in life, or if not unhappy, at least in that limbo, that ennui of, things could be better.
Right. Well, I feel like I'm in all of them. It's funny. I didn't like really even think of it that way. But then actually when the book was launched and I was having like this party, and my best friend who's known me since I was like in ninth grade sort of makes a toast, and she said something like, I see you in all of your characters, and you're in each one of these stories. And you've been that lady, sniffing people's underwear since, so she was kind of like, I was like, whoa, this is either the coolest toast I've ever gotten or the most bizarre. So I think what she was saying is like my spirit and kind of interest in people is there all the time. Because of I do also work as I'm a trained psychotherapist and parenting coach. So that's sort of what I do, to actually make money. So I have like always had an interest in people and their underlying motivations and stuff. And kind of, really on an almost daily basis, I'm kind of privy to people's yearning and helping them kind of, get in touch with what their desires are. That said, I must say that people are just so weird how they kind of almost like in a reverse magnet kind of way, kind of go away from what they truly want or what they could truly get. So I guess myself is in it in that, I mean, I don't really, I definitely have my own, you know, unhappiness or desire for other stuff. But in some ways, I feel like I'm more of a voyeur to other people's misgivings. And I just kind of feel like we're all kind of constantly, you know, trying to be kind of content or happy with what we've got. But I don't know anyone except for like some like super, you know, evolved monk on some cliff somewhere who's fully content, you know?
Right. But I see it in the stories you were talking about, the yearning. You can see it in some of the characters, like Sydney, the woman in the, or is it May? I'm sorry. Was it May? The one in the,
Oh yeah. In Bigfoot.
In Bigfoot. She seemingly has, she's got the perfect body. She's got this perfect kid who's quiet and, you know, all she wants to do is be a part of this clique of moms that she could feasibly be better than anyway. But there's also, there's this theme in a lot of the stories about how those with are looked down upon or they're made to be the butt of the joke. Like in Snow Day, the guy driving the Lexus who has the heart attack and he's got his own set of problems. Is there a disdain towards those who maybe have it all and take it for granted?
Maybe. I have to admit, maybe there is. You know, maybe there's a little, you know, I'd hate to think of it as lack of compassion, but I do sometimes feel like there are people who don't realize how lucky they are, you know, or how grateful they should be for what they have. And I guess I'm sort of trying to kind of throw a wrench into the works a little bit with some of those characters and say, you know, kind of like mess with them a little bit, maybe open their eyes a little bit to, you know, the greater world. And
I mean, you're the licensed psychotherapist, so I don't want to analyze. That's
I'd like to think that, you know, among it though, there's also sort of, you know, kind of an obvious love of people, like that, even though I'm kind of poking fun, maybe, at different social classes or different kinds of people, that underneath it, because it's really, the stories are so much about yearning and desire, that I also kind of care about them in a way.
Tell me about the title and the title story. How did Staggerwing become the main part of the book?
Well, Staggerwing. Okay, so Staggerwing was the first story I ever wrote, and you know, before I started writing short fiction, I actually have written a couple of, as of yet, still unpublished novels for young adults. And, you know, if anybody out there wants to publish one, give me a call. but I kind of reached a frustration with that, because I had been getting, I can't tell you, I mean, I could write, it'd be great to like write a short story about the like almost, you know, ironic almost and maybe journey of getting a young adult novel published. So I sort of got kind of to this point of saying, F this, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I kind of had a little bit of a, maybe I don't even want to write anymore. I mean, God knows I'm not going to pour myself into another novel, which takes, you know, at least a year to get a decent first draft, and then another year to kind of tweak it and make it into something, and then have people almost maybe, yes, but sorry, no thanks, publish it. So I thought, I don't really know what I want to do. And I really took a little bit of a break from writing fiction at all. You know, I do write parenting articles sometimes for, you know, nonfiction writing. But so I was still doing a little bit of that. And then, I don't know, I think I got like some, I got a, I had never really thought I could write a short story. And this is going to sound bizarre to me, to some people, but I feel like I felt up until I started that writing a short story, a successful short story, was hugely much, much more difficult than writing a novel. Like, to me, being able to kind of create a world that's interesting and kind of has some kind of emotional kind of punch in the way that the short stories that I love to read do, I thought I could never do it. So I just decided, like, I think I just saw that there was a short story writing class at NYU, and I, you know, continuing education, and I signed up for it. And I just was going to go to the class and figured they'd teach me how to write a short story. but then my husband said, you know, you probably should write something for this class. I'm like, I don't, oh, really? So I ended up writing Staggerwing. And it came out. I mean, it sort of, it again was a story, you know, based on something that something that someone had told me, which is sort of, you know, where we all get our ideas, either somebody you see walking down the street, or somebody tells you kind of an odd little like anecdote or something. And so somebody told me this odd little, you know, anecdote about somebody traveling and falling in love and then being completely undone and by the whole experience. And I, it just sort of came together. And so that's kind of why I decided to, I love the name Staggerwing of the plane. I just love that word. Mm-hmm. And I also felt like this is my first book, so maybe it should be named after the first story I ever wrote. And I just made sure that they put like a little yellow plane on the cover too, because that was going to be important.
Right. So, what caused the, I guess, why did you choose to write novels in YA and then adult fiction as your short stories?
Well, I think I have like a typical trajectory for a lot of like people who are parents who, you know, write. I have a daughter who's now a young adult. She's 23 years old, but I think like, I would read to her as a kid. And then at a certain point I was like, oh, I can write a picture book. So I dabbled in like little silly drawings, which were terrible, and, you know, did a couple of picture books for her. And then as she was like moving into sort of this, you know, fantasy, you know, kind of chapter book kind of era, I thought maybe I should try to do that. So I sort of, it really followed her reading kind of trajectory, the young adult. And then I wrote a young adult novel, which was about a surfer, and I'm a surfer. So that actually also came from a place of like, well, I kind of want to write about something that I'm into. So I wrote a book about a surfer. So I don't know. I never studied writing. My kind of former kind of artistic career was as a dancer and a choreographer when I was younger. And, which I actually now I'm seeing a correlation to the way my stories are structured. I kind of see them almost like as dances and rhythmically kind of based. I don't set out to do that, but that's kind of the way I write. Isn't so much, I kind of outline things and then it's sort of the pacing and the rhythm have to kind of work for me. So it was sort of weird. Like I kind of just went into the novel thing, I think, because they don't really do short stories for kids. You know, maybe if they had short story collections for, you know, 12 to 18 year olds, I would have started writing short fiction sooner, but
they should.
Yeah, they really should.
Maybe you can kick off the trend.
Oh, that's actually an interesting idea, because I do have to think of the next project now.
Yeah. And I think it's good, you know, there are kids who will devour the latest Harry Potter without a second thought. And there are those kids who have a little more trouble getting into reading and getting hooked into something. And maybe if they have like, you know, a fun size version of a story, that it might pull them in a little deeper to explore more developed narratives.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I just think generally, I mean, that's a great idea. That's interesting. Good idea, Harry.
Well, thank you.
But, you know, just the whole kind of way that short fiction is sort of thought of as like the lesser, you know, cousin to the novel. And I kind of feel like maybe that's starting to shift a little, but...
It's a shame, too, because I've written short stories, and flash fiction, too, is incredibly difficult to do something in a specific set of words, you know, 500 words or 1,000 words. I mean, to build a narrative in that time period, in that time frame, is just, it is so difficult. And so to have that genre, but, you know, that whole medium of fiction, of the short story, to have it looked down upon when compared to a novel, just because the novel is bigger, I think is doing it really short shrift, no pun intended, but
I totally agree. I mean, and with Flash, it's like really being able to kind of crystallize and do that successfully. You know, okay, so maybe it may take you a little less time to do it, but the amount of skill and the interest to me of reading really good Flash fiction, I'm always blown away.
Yeah.
You know, like as much by good short fiction and Flash fiction as I am by some, 500 page novel.
Right. Absolutely. And I read like George Saunders or Karen Russell or.
Yeah. Two of my favorites, by the way.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
The Alice Munro. I mean, just brilliant, brilliant work in such a short amount of time it's great to study. If you're going to go into that.
Totally. And it's sort of like, I kind of also feel like just reading that stuff, just like kind of by osmosis, you kind of absorb it as a writer in a way. I think like, short fiction it's like a good massage.
Right. Yeah. It's like a massager. It's like an appetizer. It just gets you going and then you want to do it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to spin a little bit into, the writing aspect of it and talk about your work with Tortoise Books. Mm-hmm. Why Tortoise? How has it been working with a small publisher?
Well, it's been great. Like I said, when I really, I know the ordeal and the kind of usual like slog that most people have to go through to get their work published. But when I put this collection together, I sent it to 3 places. And there was a fair amount of interest from another place, but there was, again, not a definite, yeah, we want to do this. And Tortoise was like super, great about it. And I had gotten to them because I don't know, this is where Twitter is is a wonderful thing for writers. I think there was a writer who posted for them that Tortoise Books was putting together an anthology, and the anthology is a great anthology if anybody wants to read it. It's called The Pleasure You Suffer, and it's based on this Portuguese word saudade, which is sort of like about this like wistful, nostalgic kind of feeling. And so I submitted a story to them, and so they had accepted my story, The Honeymoon Suite, for the anthology. And then when I was thinking, I have a collection, I should like get it out there, I just asked them if they'd be interested in looking at it, and they said yes. And I don't know how long, I think I just threw it out there really not expecting anything to happen. And a few months later, they came back and said they'd like to publish it. And they've been very super open to my ideas. I really was very invested in having a cover that I loved. Because to me, I know you're not supposed to, judge a book by its cover, but I always do. So
that's how I end the shows too.
yeah, exactly. So it's sort of, you got to do it that. So I made sure that I had a cover that I loved. They are really great communicators. Like, I don't think I've ever had to wait more than, 6 hours to get a response from them when I have a question. Jerry Brennan, again, who's the founder and publisher, is a writer himself, and he's had his own struggle with getting his work published, so he's very understanding, I think, of people whose work is out there that nobody gets to see. So he's sort of like he's like a good champion of the unsung hero. Yes, it's been great. It's been really good.
Yeah, I'm reading their website, and they seem to be, they're saying they're a hybrid of the publish on demand and the traditional publishing model. So it seems like they're very selective in what they choose, and they do the editing and all the feedback and prep work and stuff, and they just want a cut of whatever you make off the book.
Yeah, yeah. They're just sort of, so it's not the standard royalty situation. Like, really, you as the author end up ultimately making all the money, most of the money. They don't want that much of it, which is great.
FeedPress is made for bloggers and podcasters. FeedPress is a simple, intuitive, and powerful RSS analytics and podcast hosting platform. featuring accurate subscriber, podcast download, and geolocation tracking, integrated newsletters, automated publishing to popular social networks such as Twitter and Facebook, a slick drag-and-drop podcast hosting interface, and everything you need in order to submit an optimized feed to iTunes. Now featuring 400 megabytes of flexible file storage that rolls over monthly, and a new podcast post-creation system you can easily add show notes, artwork, and upload 4 high-quality bitrate MP3s per month. Upgrading storage is easy and affordable, starting at a flat rate of just $20 for 1 gigabyte. FeedPress offers an automatic migration tool so you can make that transition with ease. Answer a few simple questions and the rest is taken care of. Your feeds and subscriber data will be transitioned into your FeedPress account, leaving you free to focus on what you do best, make content. FeedPress offers free migration assistance and will take care of the hard work for you. Support is responsive and available 7 days a week via email. Get in touch and they can help. FeedPress is trusted by many popular blogs and podcasting networks such as Good Stuff FM, Electric Shadow Network, Sideshow Network, Unprofessional, The New Disruptors, Inessential, The Brooks Review, 512 Pixels, and of course, Covered. Sign up today and try FeedPress on a 14-day trial. No contracts, no commitments. Use promo code COVERED during checkout to get 10% off your first year. Had you tried to go the whole, the agent and then the, you know, one of the big five or something like that first?
Not with this. Not with this. I actually do have an agent, and her name's Zoe Sandler. She's with ICM. And she represents me, represented me with my, and continues to, with my, the novels, which we're still trying to get published. So she actually helped sort of, you know, tweak the contract with Tortoise, you know, which they really appreciated also because they're a small publishing company and they haven't done that many, hadn't at that point done that many books. I think they now are going to be publishing next year as many books as they've already published for the last 3 years in 1 year. So they're really kind of expanding and looking to grow, not in a bad way, but in a, you know, kind of a good way. Mm-hmm. But so Zoe helped sort of tweak the agreement, but she didn't find them for me. I found Tortoise myself.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would never even occurred to me to try to get my short story collection picked up by a big publisher. I kind of feel like no way they'd be interested in me. I mean, I guess that everybody feels that way.
I feel every time I send a query letter, I'm like, I'm just waiting for the rejection at this point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? You never know. I tell you, I think it's like, it's such a needle in the haystack kind of situation a lot of the time. But I did definitely just wanted to kind of connect with people with my short fiction in a way that felt sort of almost like my community in a way. Like I feel like Tortoise was like an outcropping of sort of the people and the writers and the journals that I've connected with over the past 3 years. It would have been bizarre almost to try to get my stuff done by some big publishing company.
And along that line of inquiry, you know, this is your debut collection. This is a small publisher. And yet you have blurbs on the back from Peter Hedges, who wrote What's Eating Gilbert Grape. You've got Emily Schultz, who wrote The Blondes. Hope Davis, the actress. How did this come about? Is this from Tortoise? Or did you have to go out and ask these people, would you please read my book and blurb it?
I had to go out and ask the people. Emily Schultz is she was the editor and in chief at of Joyland magazine.
Right.
Which she now is sort of like, she's sort of handed over the reins to a woman named, I think her name is Kelly Wu. I'm spacing out exactly her name. But so Emily published, I love Joyland. I love everything they do. I love pretty much everything they publish. I just love their whole premise of being kind of, they have like a, you know, East Coast, Toronto, West Coast, the South. They kind of have all these regions and they have specific editors who kind of read from each region. And they do some great stuff. But anyway, so Emily had published Stay a While, which is the first story in the collection. And then I actually sent her another thing for a while. They were doing like going to do like a flash fiction sort of supplement-y type thing to Joyland, which I don't know if they continue to do or not. But so I sent her something and she sort of got back to me and said, you know what, we are so bombarded with, you know, submissions for this, but if you've got anything else for Joyland again, I'd love to see it. So I sent her Blossoms, which she loved. And so it was like the first time I'd sort of been like solicited in a kind of backwards way.
Oh,
like,
that's great.
You know? Yeah. So I feel like she's been a big supporter and a big fan of my work. And then I had to ask these people, you know, I mean, Hope Davis happens to be a good friend and neighbor of mine. So that's how I got her.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. But she actually read, she also though is an amazing editor. She read through, it was really interesting. She read through Stranger in Paradise with me. I think because I wanted to, I just sent it to her for her feedback on it. And she's sort of like, I want to go over this with you. And so I got to sit there with her and have her read it out loud while she was giving me edits. And I don't know if you've ever heard Hope read a story. She's like a phenomenal reader. She's just like, the Selected Shorts audiobook, like superstar. She's just amazing to listen to.
Well, she was on one of my favorite television shows of all time, Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom. So I'm a huge fan already.
Yeah, no, she's just incredible. And hearing her read, like if you ever want to get an Audible book, like look for her name and just her. She does Ann Patchett's State of Wonder, which is just, I actually missed a stop on the highway. I was driving and listening to it and she was reading and I'd missed my stop, my exit because I was so like in the story because of the writing and the way Hope was reading it. So, fingers crossed, maybe one of these days she'll be reading one of my stories somewhere cool and groovy.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So overall, you've had a good experience with a small publisher and you would recommend them? Because I'm fascinated by the whole side of that, of the publishing world. Cause I had interviewed, Ben Leroy, who owns or not owns, but runs Tyrus Books. And so I've talked to several authors who've published with small publishers and results have been varying. Some people really loved the publisher they were with. Some people weren't thrilled with their post. So I'm always interested to hear of people's experiences.
Yeah. So far, I mean, I have no complaints whatsoever. I mean, you know, I'm going out to Chicago actually next weekend and to do a reading that Tortoise has set up for me. And they're also going to be part of the Chicago Book Expo and they're going to have a booth and I'm going to, you know, sign books at their booth. And I've never, it's really wild though, all this stuff, like I've never met them, you know?
Right.
So it's going to be cool to, you know, actually have a live, you know, interaction with these people who've been so important in my life, you know? It's pretty wild. But yeah, I have no complaints. I also feel like, especially, I think like there's so many great small presses out there and so many great journals and finding, if you find places that kind of, to me, like there's no greater thrill than a complete and total stranger loving what I write. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing if my aunt likes it, but like, you know, like for you to say you really love my collection, it's like, you don't have to love my collection. You know, you don't have to like anything I do, you know? So it's always, it's just sort of, it's a really great feeling. And I feel like there's so much more of that authentic, like love connected to small presses. Like they don't take things that they don't love, you know?
Right. Yeah. I see that they say on their website, they believe, you know, anything will sell in time, but they're very selective about what they do take.
Yeah, Tortoise is definitely that way, but I feel like most of them are. It's like they don't have to worry so much about the bottom line.
Right.
And what's saleable and what your credentials are and, you know, where you went to school and all that stuff. It just doesn't matter necessarily with a lot of them.
And you get a lot more variety that way. You don't get every book ending with the word girl on the cover.
Yeah.
I noticed on social media you had been posting pictures of Staggerwing in bookstores. I think it was Powell's, right? Was it Powell's?
Oh, I think the one I did was Book Court, which is here in Brooklyn, which is where I did my launch. And they had like, what was wild is that like my launch was like overwhelmingly well attended. I was kind of blown away, and they sold out of books, and I wasn't sure if they were going to get any more. But I wandered in there the other day, and I was like, oh my God, my book is like on the table, the central table, like surrounded by, you know, Teju Cole and, Bob Dylan. So I had to take a picture.
So, and I want to talk about that, because that's not a normal occurrence for a book from a small publisher. A lot of times you have to specifically request, would you carry this?
Yeah.
They seem to be, at least the independent bookstore seem to be very open to carrying books that might not go anywhere anytime soon. And I'm wondering, is that Tortoise Books PR department?
I think it's me living in the neighborhood doing its job. Yeah, and having them sort of have to order more books because people, like, were on a waiting list. So I think, like, you know, maybe there were, like, 10 people who couldn't buy books at the launch, and so they ordered another, you know, 20 books or something and ended up with, like, 6 that they stuck on the table.
So do you primarily set up the signings and everything and the readings on your own, or does Tortoise step in also?
Yeah, I've been doing most of that.
Okay.
They have been providing me with books for those kind of things, but yeah, mostly I've been doing the setting up of readings, but for the ones that they've been setting up for me for Chicago.
So what's that like? Because I know a lot of people think if they get signed with the publisher, you know, they can just write and they won't have to worry about anything else. But these days you really do have to be the marketer as well.
Yeah. I, you know, it would be easy to be frustrated by, like, oh my God, I'm having to do all this work. But everyone I know, including people who have big, huge deals with big fancy places, end up doing it all themselves. It's like the PR departments do so little now, it seems, unless you're like the one of the 5 big books they're trying to promote that season.
Right.
So I've kind of noticed it with way more well-known, successful writers that I'm connected to on social media. They are constantly, you know, talking their own stuff up or asking people if they've got, you know, places for them to read. And yeah, I think it's like sort of goes with the territory. So, which is good to know, because then it doesn't make you feel so bad when you feel like you're doing it all yourself and it's because you're with a small press.
Right.
I mean, Tortoise has been great about, like, if I make a connection, like, you know, when you had reached out to me about doing this and I was so psyched and I was like, send him a book. They're like, sure. You know, they just send one over. Right. So they're kind of really on top of making my work accessible and available to people when they want it, which is great.
That's awesome. And to your point earlier about, you know, when strangers tell you they love the book or they love your writing, I feel the same way when someone actually not just agrees to come on the show, but is like excited to talk to me. I'm like, oh, I'm nobody. Yeah. Who are these people who actually have like done something with their lives who want to talk to me?
No, it's great. It's, you know, I think, you know, what you're doing is fantastic, and it's sort of keep it up. You know, you've had some really cool people on your show.
I know. I feel like I got away with something. But thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
How has the response been from like the bookstores and the places you've set up the signings and the readings? Are they generally open to it?
Yeah. You know, I think it helps to have that cool cover and those like snazzy people.
The cover is very good.
Thank you. I love my cover. It's a designed by a great graphic designer person I know who lives out in Montauk. She's amazing. But yeah, no, they've been like, people have been really open to it, you know, and it definitely helps to have, it doesn't necessarily have, the blurbs don't necessarily have to be by like cool and groovy people, but if the blurbs give you an idea of what the book is about and what it's like, then it seems like a lot of small press, like small independent bookstores or reading series are pretty happy to have you come do stuff. I guess being published in certain journals makes it easier too. I don't even know how much like snooping around they're doing after I reach out to them.
Right.
You know, like, who is this person and why should we let her come and, you know, use up our time? But yeah, so far I haven't gotten any rejections.
must be nice.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of like, I'm sure that's going to happen. Well, I did like reach, I shouldn't say, I mean, I probably have that I don't know about yet. Like I've reached out to a few places about doing readings or doing other podcasts and stuff. And like, you know, I haven't heard back from them, but you know, that's probably because I'm not cool enough, but I don't really care. I'm too old to care how cool I am.
Well, anytime you want to come back and talk about a new book, I'm more than happy.
Well, that'd be fun. I mean, now I have to write a new book.
Write a new book just so you can come on my show.
Okay, that's a good motivation, actually.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. This is great.
It was really fun to talk to you, and good luck with your own writing and work. Get it out there. Just get it out there.
Thank you. I've got the first 25,000 of a new work in progress with a beta critique partner of mine who turned the book around at just the right moment before I totally killed myself over something that would have to be rewritten anyway. She seems to really like what I've done. So
great.
I'm sticking
with
it.
Good.
And Steph Post, who wrote A Tree Born Crooked, and she has a new book coming out from Polis Books. I think it's called Lightwood. And she's been on the show. I think she was my third or fourth guest.
Yeah.
She also said, like, stick with it. You know, your work is solid. You just got to find the right person. So
yeah.
I'm hoping.
Well, fingers crossed for you. And
thank you.
You know, thank you again. Thank you so much for reaching out to me and asking me to do this. And it's been a pleasure. I hope I made sense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, you've been fantastic.
Oh, all right. Cool.
Where can people find you?
Twitter is is at Alice Kaltman, and I think the A and the K are capitalized.
Okay.
And that's where I like to connect to reading and writing people the most is Twitter.
Yeah, it's become a double-edged sword for me. Like it's absolutely imperative to my workflow to use it. Like I find most of my guests through Twitter, but at the same time, it's just become such a toxic hellhole. I kind of want to walk away from it entirely, but I can't right now.
Yeah. I just sort of just keep it very selectively sort of writing and, you know, all the political stuff I can't like even begin to go to there. So.
Right. And do you have a website?
I do have a website. It's alicekaltman.com.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
that's
it's,
easy.
It was originally designed for the young adult and middle grade novel in mind, but now it's sort of Staggerwing's kind of taking it over a bit, but it has a very youthful tone, which may or may not be a good thing. Sort of a little bit like people read my kind of weird, sort of slightly perverse short fiction for adults, and then they go to my website and it's like, "Hi, I'm a surfer. I read mermaids."
Well, it's very soothing. You've got the ocean in the background. So.
Right.
This has been Covered with special guest Alice Kaltman. Links to Alice's book and all other materials discussed will be available in our show notes and on our website at hologramradio.org/covered. Thank you for listening. If you like today's show, I would love it if you took a few minutes to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes so other book lovers can better find us. And if your podcast listening app gives you the ability to recommend us, please do. I'd like to thank our Patreon patrons, Kyle Wallace, Alex Knight, and Aaron Mankey. If you're able to give a dollar or two an episode to help fund more great interviews like this one today, please consider supporting Covered at patreon.com/covered. And if you fancy other Hologram Radio shows and would like to drop a few dollars their way, you can support the network as a whole at patreon.com/hologramradio. All proceeds go towards covering bandwidth, hosting costs, and equipment upgrades. You can follow me on Twitter at HCMarks and the show at Covered_FM. Thank you to TJ Cosgrove for our beautiful logo and Lorenzo Gudemi for all the hard work he puts into making this show sound fantastic. And as always, thank you again to Feed Press and Noct Sound Engineering for their support of this show. And remember, don't judge a book till it's covered.